Welcome to the Fuzzy Mike. Fuzzy Mike. The interview series, the podcast, whatever Kevin wants to call it. It's Fuzzy Mike.
Hello, and welcome to the Fuzzy Mike. I have long said that women are infinitely tougher than men. Tougher does not mean stronger. The old joke is that women are the ones that give birth, because if men gave birth, the human species would cease to exist because we couldn't handle the pain. So true. And yes, I know. There are some men who are tougher than some women. And there are some women who are stronger than some men. Those are specific cases. I'm talking in a general sense here. And here's an example of how my wife is tougher than I am. She gets these debilitating migraines. They're officially called hemiplegic migraines, and they're characterized by motor weakness affecting only one side of the body. There's often impairment in vision, speech, or sensation. When she gets one of these, what I call grand mal migraines, her left side goes numb and she can't talk. If they didn't cause her so much pain, I wouldn't mind her getting them more frequently. I mean, the peace and quiet. But these are devastating to her. Now, I get migraines too. I get them over my right eye, and they make me nauseous. I even dry heave when I have a bad one. With me, however, I can still talk, and I don't go numb. When I get one, I'm in bed for 24 hours, minimum. When my wife gets one of her bad ones, she lays down until her speech and mobility comes back. She'll have a throbbing headache for 3 or more days after, but within a matter of hours, she's up taking care of the dogs. I know what you're asking. Why would she need to take care of the dogs? Can't I take care of the dogs and let her sleep off her migraine? I'd like to. I really would. But our one dog is on so many medications that you basically need to be a registered nurse to administer all of them and at the correct times. She knows which meds to give and what time he's supposed to get them. In stark terms, she's an expert. I'm a novice. When a pro is on site, you don't put an amateur in the game. Yeah, I could learn, but I recently downloaded an animation software program. I watched a YouTube tutorial. It was literally step by step. I still couldn't figure out how to do it. My lack of animation comprehension only killed a stick figure. I screw up the meds, I kill one of our sons. With the other dog, well, he likes to eat poo. And when he does eat poo, he typically throws up. And they say the breed is a smart one. Poo and vomit are two things I don't even do individually. Combine them? Well, let me give you a story. I came home from work once, and there was poo vomit greeting me when I opened the door. This was in Houston, in the summer. It was over 100 degrees. I sat outside for 2 hours waiting for my wife to get home from her hair appointment because I couldn't stand the smell. I've tried to clean it up before, once, and I ended up with watery eyes and a batch of my own vomit added into the mix. Yes, I'm a weak man with an even weaker stomach. I have other examples of my wife's superior fortitude. I think you get the idea. Now, this is my favorite recent example of women being tougher than men. My wife and I created a pediatric cancer nonprofit called Snowdrop Foundation. Our biggest fundraiser happens every December in the form of a 55-hour foot race called the Snowdrop Ultra 55. Solo runners and relay teams of 10 run a nearly 3/4 of a mile loop for 55 hours. Whoever runs the most miles wins. Now, the majority of our solo runners are out there to try to run 100 miles. 100 miles in 55 hours. That's less than 2 miles per hour. Sounds easy, right? Well, we have about a 40% attrition rate in the last 11 years we've held the race. Only 6 out of 10 runners make it to 100 miles. In 2022, we had a racer get to 97.35 miles before something happened that kept her from reaching 100 miles. Sarah vowed to come back and get that elusive 100-mile finish, and just this past December, she was back to try again. with 4 hours to go in the race. After she'd been at it for 50 hours, the race timing director ran the numbers, and we had to tell Sarah that if she didn't pick up her pace, she was projected to run 99.74 miles in 55 hours. After 50 hours of moving, Sarah was bent over at the waist at about a 60-degree angle. She was leaning at about a 45-degree angle on her right side. She was shuffling as fast as she could, but not as fast as she needed to get the miles she desperately wanted. We gave Sarah the disheartening news as she passed the start-finish line. You're on pace to not make it. It pained us to tell her this because at this point, she was giving it everything she had, and it wasn't going to be enough. Several men had already dropped from the race, realizing that 100 miles was out of reach for them. Some of our racers that were still on the course heard about Sarah projecting to be short, and they rallied around her. Curtis and Lawan on her left side, and Lydia and childhood cancer survivor Reno on her right side. Sarah placed her right arm on Reno's shoulder, and for the next 3+ hours, the five of them walked the course at a faster pace than Sarah was shuffling on her own. With every completed lap, we encouraged Sarah to keep going, telling her that she was doing amazing. When every muscle in her body was betraying her, and the shoulder she was leaning on was the only thing keeping her upright, she somehow managed to move her legs just a little faster, and soon, her lap time started to improve. Her pain got worse, her bend got more pronounced, but she was starting to make up the time she needed to get to 100 miles. Watching her suffer, but never give up, and continually getting stronger with every step, well, it just reinforced my belief in the toughness of women. Sarah went on to finish her 100 miles. She did it with 29 minutes and 37 seconds to spare. 54 hours, 30 minutes, 37 seconds. She came in 38th place overall, but on that day, she was the toughest of all. In the news, a former Texas congresswoman has been accused of downloading other people's food pictures and passing them off as her own on social media. Food pictures? How badly do you need validation in your life that you claim other people's food pictures as your own? And what is this world coming to when we can't trust a politician? At least when I was claiming John Holmes's pictures as my own, when a friend was...
You're so stupid! You're stupid!
A Georgia man suffered from severe burns after attempting to open a bag of chips with a lighter because he was unable to do it with his hands. Am I the only one who wants to know how the hell he got the lighter to work? Have you ever tried to ignite one of those big lighters? You need the finger strength of Arnold Schwarzenegger to get that to work. And those trigger igniters? You ever gotten one of those to produce a flame in less than 10 squeezes?
Look what I have created! I have made fire!
Finally, Alabama is scheduled on January 25th to be the first state to put an inmate to death using nitrogen hypoxia. Alabama has botched 4 lethal injections since 2018. Let's see. Botched 4 executions and now a method that's never been tried? No thanks. I'll just kill myself.
I got this!
My guest today is as tough as they come. She's in 4 halls of fame. As a world champion kickboxer, she's in the Kickboxing Hall of Fame. She's a world champion boxer, who's in the Boxing Hall of Fame. She's in the Black Belt Hall of Fame. And she's also in our high school alumni Hall of Fame. Yep. She's a former classmate of mine who grew up in the subdivision behind my house. Yeah, I know. I've got some badass high school friends. Bridget Riley is a Hollywood stuntwoman and a victor in her biggest fight ever, a cancer survivor. Hi, buddy.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm good. How you doing?
I'm so excited to be talking with you. This is going to be so great.
You? Thank you so much for doing this.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thank you for doing it. How's Bob doing?
He's good.
How long have you guys been married?
2009.
So 2009. Right. So you guys didn't get married right out of high school then?
No, he married somebody else who was in my class. and like right out of high school, and they had kids, and yeah, you know, I took off. Like I tried New York, I went to LA, and all these years later, I was on a dare to be on Facebook because I couldn't stand social media.
Oh, me either. Yeah.
Hated it, especially after MySpace. I was like, no, I don't need another way for people to cheat on me. So I hated it. So I went on there on a dare, and he happened to, you know, be on there. And yeah, he started talking to me.
How cool is that?
Yep.
Super cool. Yeah, I can't stand. That's one of the reasons why I retired from radio as early as I did. I hate social media. Can't stand it.
I have to be on there now. And the more people told me you have to be on there if you want to stay working as a stunt woman, the more I didn't want to be on there. It's the same with the iPhone. The more people are like, you got to get an iPhone. I'm like, I like my BlackBerry, but I tapped out, you know.
Yeah, well, it's the same thing with me. I have to be on because of the podcast and, you know, all the other things that I'm working on. But people just can get so nasty. It's unbelievable how brave people get behind a computer.
Oh, they're real tough back there. I'm like, why don't you meet me outside?
That's not anything I would recommend after watching some of the highlight videos. Holy crap, Bridge. You were this sweet, beautiful dance girl, cheerleader girl in high school, and then you get this killer left hook and you sit down in your punches and you're almost killing girls. What the hell?
Me likey.
I did not know that about you, that you did martial arts throughout high school.
I did. I started, I was a gymnast. Mm-hmm. And so freshman and sophomore year, I was still doing gymnastics. And the more I started going to Patrick's karate tournament, Ali Shaw and Patrick's karate tournaments, the more I was like, I want to do that. I want some of that. And that's when I made the decision. It was like the end of sophomore year, I jumped into karate, and I mean, I ate, drank, slept it. Like I lived at the dojo. Like you couldn't get me out of there, you know?
There couldn't have been a lot of girls, a lot of women doing it back then.
Not as many as the guys. You know, I was always fighting the boys, the guys. And I loved that because I really think that's what made me tough. And then when I faced a girl, I was just like, I'd just walk right through. Yeah.
So would they go full force on you?
No, not complete. Not everybody. Like when when I sparred my brother, I would whisper, don't hit me so hard. And he's like, shut up. And, but yeah, they had to pull back a little bit, but it was different coming up in karate than it is today. And it's definitely different than when I transferred into kickboxing. And then it was totally different when I transferred into boxing, because my whole team in boxing and in LA, they were all men, and they were all Mexican, and they were all world champions. So it would be like me fighting Johnny Tapia in his prime. He would put it on me. And that's why women shouldn't be fighting men. And all this junk going on right now, you have got to be kidding me. Wait till somebody dies. I hate to say that, but it's not going to be good. And it's wrong. A man, I can whip a less experienced guy. And I kind of liked it. But but you put somebody at a world-class level, there's no comparison. He's still going to have a man's strength, a man's bone density. And, you know, all that. It's just not equal. It's not right.
Before you came on, that's what I was talking about. I was talking about, I have long said women are infinitely tougher than men. Stronger? Not so. But there's always exceptions to the rule. There are men who are tougher than some women. There are some women who are stronger than the weakest man. Okay. But yeah, right. You're talking about transgender. You're talking about transgender athletes now being accepted in mixed martial arts, former men now claiming to be women fighting against women. And you're right. It's a dangerous slope.
I'm 1000% against it. And that just, I can't believe, I mean, I'm just like, it's just a matter of time, you know, watching the circus and all these other sports. I'm like, it's just a matter of time, you know, and there was a really good fighter back in the day, and she wanted to take on a guy, and she got her rear end just handed to her. And I'm like, well, that's what you get. You know what? Why don't you stay in your lane and just shut up and let's get together and move forward. You know, as women, we were trying to, man, I used to pound on doors, you know, trying to get my hardest fight was outside the ring. I'm just like, put me in that ring, man. I can do this too. I will put butts in the seats. Trust me. Just put me in there, you know?
Well, you were one of the pioneers of the sport. I mean, when you first started in the early 90s, women's boxing was not that popular. It was not that prevalent.
No, it wasn't happening. It would be so hard to get me opponents because I'm like, you better get three behind that first one because they would just drop out or fall out or and it was so hard because there were so few women that a lot of times I would give up weight. I mean, it was the Wild West, especially back in kickboxing. I would get on that scale with weights in my pockets. And, you know, I'd be fighting girls, they're held out. And I was just like, bring it.
Because you were like 118. I think you fought at 118. Is that correct?
Yeah, I fought at 118. My world title was at 118. And then I dropped in boxing, I dropped down to 115. I was just coming in stronger. And these girls, you weigh in the day before. So by the time you get in the ring, they're like 10, 12, 15 pounds heavier. I'm like, you're three weight divisions. And so my team is like, we're going to drop you down a little bit more. So you come more at the top. You know, it's like wrestling. You want to be strong and, you know, you got to make that weight. I mean,
yeah. I've spent a lot of time around combat sports. So I know how the rehydration goes. I know how the eating goes after you weigh in. I mean, I remember when Strikeforce MMA was in Houston and I got to take Tim Kennedy around before the weigh-in. And the dude was just so dehydrated and just like so, like his skin was so tight. And then afterwards it was like, man, what can I do? What can I do? And I can't imagine what that did to your body.
It couldn't be good. I mean, it definitely couldn't be good. And I did so many unhealthy things too, because you really learn how to be a binge eater, because after you suffer and sacrifice, you know, afterwards you want to eat everything not nailed down. I mean, I would fly back from LA to St. Louis. I'm like, I want Emos. I need Rich and Charlie's. Let's go to Giannino's. I mean, I wanted White Castle. I need everything. And I would pound it, man. I was like, get out of my way. And that pizza's mine.
Yeah. You know, that's one thing that, because I watched your OHS Hall of Fame induction. And
thank you, by the way. I owe that to you, man. I mean, if that was all you, thank you.
No, it wasn't all me. It was all you. Look, they came to me when they first started the Hall of Fame. They asked me if I wanted to be in it. And then they said, do you know anybody that you think needs to be in it? You were number one that I put on there because I didn't know at the time that you got in based on your community service. Okay. I mean, that's why I'm in. I'm not in because I did anything spectacular in the world of sports or entertainment or anything. But
yes, you did. Yes, you did. Congratulations, by the way.
Oh, thank you. Well, congratulations to you, too. But I said, you know, this, and I flat out told him, I said, this is not a real Hall of Fame if you're not in it, if Todd Newton's not in it, and if Jason Danieli isn't in it. Okay? Jason still has to get in, you know?
I can't believe in there. I mean,
right.
He's wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
So for those of you that didn't grow up in Oakville and didn't go to Oakville High School, Jason Danieli is a award-winning performer on Broadway, and he is a recording superstar, and he's just he was incredible. He is incredible.
Amazing. And that is a hard world. Like that genre, whoa. And
I can't even imagine.
Well, you in radio, same thing.
It was the only thing I ever wanted to do, Bridge, was be in radio. When you work for 22 months for absolutely no pay and you're putting in 90 hours a week to do it, you know, that's a passion. And you got paid dick when you first started out in boxing. It was like $400 a fight, right?
It was almost like I paid them, let me in that ring and trying to sell tickets and, you know, get my hustle on. And yeah, I made hardly nothing, but I didn't care. And I was like, I'll do this for free. Put me in that ring. And you're absolutely right. When you love it, You know, there's nothing going to stop you.
Well, that's what when I go and speak at high school job fairs and stuff, I always tell the kids, I'm like, don't take a job for the money, take a job for the passion. And if you'll work a job for free, you have found your calling.
It's absolutely true. It's great advice. Huh. Yes.
I lived it.
So no shortcut.
No, yeah, there isn't.
Yeah.
And do you, cause you do a lot, do you still do a lot of work with underprivileged kids? I know you did that in LA.
I did that in LA, not so much over here in Naples, Florida, but I am speaking now for the American Cancer Society and I'm an advocate and I'm sharing my story and, you know, I'm talking not so much to kids, but, you know, just to the masses and just to educate. But yeah, I still have a heart for the kids. And mm-hmm. that was a neat thing we did in LA. My managers were wonderful. They worked with communities and schools. And I mean, we were going everywhere. We were going into juvie and, you know, I'm seeing all these young gangbanger girls and I was scared. I was like, how am I going to get their ear? Why on earth would they want to listen to this white girl from the Midwest? You know, and my trainer, you know, I was surrounded by Mexicans. Benny the Jet, Yukita's sister, was my mentor, trainer, my everything. And her husband managed me. And she's like, mija, you got a lot to say. You get up there and you just share your heart. And I was like, I don't know, man. It was intimidating.
I bet.
And we put on a little show. And once I started hitting the focus mitts and crack, you know, bang, bang, just cracking the pads, these girls were just like, that white girl can get down. So then I had that here.
Yeah.
You want to share, you know, it's like, hey, man, you made a couple wrong moves, but you can make some right ones now. You can turn that thing around and shift your perspective. And, you know, anything can happen.
If you put in the work.
Exactly.
If you put in the work.
I have some integrity.
you said you do a lot of work with the American Cancer Society. We are going to talk about the greatest battle of your life. And I know it didn't happen in the ring. And we're going to get to that because, as you know, I have a soft spot for pediatric cancer patients and you and I have kind of that symbiotic relationship with connection to cancer. But we are talking about your fighting career first. Then we're going to talk about your stunt woman career. How many world championships did you win? Was it 3 in boxing and 5 in kickboxing?
5 in kickboxing and 1 in boxing, the IFBA.
And that was in your first professional fight, right?
My very first fight was my pro debut. So I never had an amateur fight. So
never.
Back then, never. I didn't. And that's a learning ground. You know, like that's your college. That's where you really get in there and learn. But back then there weren't enough females in the amateurs. So my trainer was like, if you want to do this, you got to go pro right off the bat. I'm like, put me in that ring, man. I'm ready. And so that was my pro debut. And I beat the U.S. champion from Kansas City. And she grabbed the mic. I mean, she was so nice to me before the fight because she had like a 12-1 record and I'm 0-0 goose eggs, you know? And she's looking at me like, oh my God, this poor little thing. I'm gonna clean her up. I'm gonna mop up the floor with her. And I took it to her and it was a good fight. And they said I won. And she grabbed the mic and she said, this is a hometown decision. I got robbed and I demand a rematch and in my hometown, I said, done. So 1 month later, we went to Kansas City and I busted her nose. I cut her. She was bleeding. They stopped it. So I got the TKO. So then after that, I had a couple more fights and then I went for a world title fight way too soon. But when you're a fighter, you want to fight. So I took it and I got my butt kicked. And it broke my heart more than anything. So that's what made me go to LA. Because my dad and my brother were like shoving black belt magazines in front of me. And, you know, like, look, if you want to be on this cover, that's where you need to go. You need to go to the Jet Center in LA, in Van Nuys, California. And you need to be with those people. And I was just like, I'm there. So it was a minute before I won a world title in kickboxing. It was a process, but I had the U.S. title.
Yeah. Did you travel all over the world for kickboxing?
A little bit. Like, yeah. We went to some places, but I fought a lot in L.A.
Yeah. What's your favorite place you've ever been?
Montreal, I loved. I loved fighting there. It was gorgeous. It was beautiful. Yeah. You know, when you're fighting, you can't eat, you can't drink, you can't party, you can't do nothing. So I was like, I need to come back here.
Right?
That place was amazing.
And you spent some time in Australia, I know, with Power Rangers, Mighty Morphin Power Rangers, right?
Yeah, we shot that there. So I was there for a couple months.
Was that really your first role in Hollywood?
Well, I did a low budget film before I moved to LA. So technically I was still living in Oakville, and it was a kickboxing promoter, Dale Apollo Cook from Tulsa, Oklahoma. And I fought his girl and I beat her. And he was just like, hey man, you're really charismatic, blah, blah, blah. And he was doing all these low budget films, not to knock it, in the Philippines. And he's like, you want to come? And I'm like, you know, this was pre sex trafficking. I didn't think anything, you know, I'm like, yeah, I'm gone. Let's go. I go, but I don't really know how to act at all. He goes, don't worry, you'll get it. And, that was my first film, but I learned so much. I learned a lot. And then cut to now I'm in LA. I was like, I suck at acting. This will never happen again. And there was a casting director watching me train at the Jet Center. And he goes, you should come on this audition. I go, no, I'm here to be the world champion. You're in my way. And he goes, well, you can make a lot more money and have more time to train. And so I go, let's go. So that's how it all happened. That was my first role. And I got an acting part on the Power Rangers. So that was how it all started. I didn't even mean for it to happen.
No, but it worked out really, really well, didn't it?
It did.
So, you talk about a low budget film. When you're starting out in boxing, and then you eventually make what I consider the show, working for Don King and fighting on the undercard of Lennox Lewis, Evander Holyfield in Madison Square Garden. How does that, like when you're in minor league baseball, you're traveling on a bus and you're not really eating very good. And when you make it to the major leagues, everything is exponentially better. How does that compare in boxing?
Well, boxing for women is a whole different animal. So, I mean, I was pro all the time. Mm-hmm. Like I said, my pro debut, never had an amateur fight. The money wasn't there, but I just wanted to fight. And I had good people. I had a great team. I had great management. And, you know, in LA, it was so hot. It was so happening. I mean, you had Mickey Rourke and Freddie Roach started Outlaw Boxing Gym. And my trainers, what was so great about them is they took me all around. I went to all the hot gyms, boxing gyms. They're not even advertised. Like, you have to know where they are. But they were awesome. It was like Rocky, you know. And we went all around, and people were seeing that I could fight. And so they were like, yeah, we want to put you on. We want to start putting you on the cards. And so I just started getting on all these shows. And then Rick Kulis with Event Entertainment came in, and he was the first to do like an all-female show. So we made history in Reseda. And I got cut in my fight. And Marty Dankins, who's like a, you know, famous referee, he didn't even give my corner a chance to work on the cut. I'm like, look, if I were a dude, you fix it up. I didn't, you know what I mean? You're fighting. I'm like, I don't care. Get this blood out of my face. I got to go. And I was so bummed. And it was so hard because, you know, it was hard, I think, for some people to accept women getting hit like that, you know? Mm-hmm. And I'm like, I'll take a couple to give a couple. Right. And so we had to work on move your head, get your head out of the way, you know, bob and weave, baby. And I'm just like, yeah. And I need to keep some of those brain cells. But it, the money, it's not like it is today in MMA.
Right.
I fought for Sugar Ray Leonard. I fought for De La Hoya. When I fought for Don King, the money was a lot better, but it still was nothing compared to what the men make. And back then, it just wasn't there yet. I don't care. I still did it.
But what about the dressing room, and what about the atmosphere and the energy?
Oh, it's the best. I mean, it's like such a rush. And I loved every part, every aspect. I loved the weigh-in. I loved the press conferences. I loved, you know, resting and getting amped and warming up in the locker room. And so much goes on mentally. Like, fighters are always like, no, I'm not nervous. I'm like, then you're lying. You're lying, or you're in the wrong sport, because I remember I would almost get sick. I was so nervous and, you know, just trying to calm that thing down. And it was like, and I didn't want anybody to know because I'm like, what a punk, you know? But I was, honestly, every time I fought, I was terrified. I was like, why am I doing this? And then I'd have to talk to myself. I belong here. I deserve this. I've worked hard. No one works harder than me, you know? And
it's so like, was it nerves or was it anxiety or was it self-doubt or all of the above?
All the above.
Really?
And you have somebody, yeah. And you know, you're getting judged and you're performing in front of a whole audience. And then you got somebody at the other side of that ring coming in there to knock you out unconscious if they can. So there's a lot going on, but I'll tell you what, as soon, and I love the music and walking up to the ring and the stare down. As soon as that bell rings, all of it's gone.
Yeah.
And it's on. It's just on. It's like, you know, so I don't know. That was my process. I would go through this whole thing and I'd get in there. And then afterwards, there's nothing like it. Nothing else made me feel more alive than being in that ring. And afterwards, I mean, you know, you have to come down from that high. Mm-hmm. It is the ultimate high. And then, you know, then I'm like, okay, when's the next one? Let's do it again.
How long does it take for, because the adrenaline obviously is just sky high, like you just said. But how long does it take for the soreness to set in? And how long does it take to get rid of it?
You mean like the soreness after the fight?
Absolutely.
It depends who I'm fighting. It depends how, you know, if it, because some people I would just knock out really quick. Mm-hmm. And then some people I could hit them with a bat and they're not going down. I'm like, wow, this is weird. It's a weird place to go when you're used to hurting girls, where now like my Red Cross is doing not even phasing her. So depending on all the variables, like how tough this opponent is, how long the fight, is it a 10 round fight? I've gone 12 rounds in kickboxing, 10 in boxing.
Mm-hmm.
So it just depends. Sometimes, my head, like they kept me up all night. Like I'm sure I've had so many concussions. It's not good. It's not good. It's not good. And thank God I was very protected. And I believe God protected me throughout my entire career, because when I got into the Hall of Fame, the big one in boxing, I saw some of my friends and they're not doing so well. You know, there's definite consequences. And I'm just so grateful that I was protected. Like God really, by the grace of God, I believe I was just protected. And because sometimes, you know, like in Rocky, when you see that, you know, when they're in the, you know, Rocky's in the shower after he fought Ivan Drago. And, you know, you see, I had that. I had headaches. I had, I felt my balance was off. My equilibrium was off. I just didn't feel right. And it took a little while to get that back together, you know? And, and then like, well, kickboxing is totally different than boxing. Like kickboxing, my legs, I had bruises from leg kicks on my thighs where I just looked like I got out of a car accident. Like what happened to you? Like welts and bruises all over, you know, but I loved it. I'm like black eyes. I'm like, ooh, look at that. You know, cause people would be like, wear some sunglasses. I'm like, that's my bragging rights. You know, like
badge of honor. I didn't know that you were a fighter until I turned on ESPN2 one day, and here you are defending a title against Aisha Lawson, which was the women's fight of the year that year. And the first round was just amazing for her, not so much for you.
Not so much for me.
What happened?
That was crazy. That girl was from Liverpool, and in the interview before, she was like saying, this won't go past four. Like she was certain she's going to knock me out. And I was just like, that's scary, you know? And it was live. And that first round, I walked right into her punch. I mean, it was, she just timed it. Kudos to her, man. She dropped me. And Richard Steele was the referee. So there was controversy. He had an early stoppage. Remember, he caught all that crap. I don't know if it was a Pernell Whitaker.
It was Meldrick Taylor.
Yeah. And so there was all that controversy behind him. And he should have stopped the fight. He easily could have stopped the fight and nobody would have said anything because I was hurt. I don't remember getting up.
There were 52 seconds left in the first round when you went down. And this harkens back to earlier what you were talking about in your fight in Reseda when Marty Denken was the referee. He stopped it too early. Al Bernstein, who was the commentator, after the fight when you won in the ninth round, said, a lot of credit goes to Bridget Riley, but some credit goes to Richard Steele for not stopping that fight in the first round when normal people probably would have said, a woman doesn't need to be taking this kind of abuse.
Yeah. I was hurt. I barely made it up.
You didn't know where you were.
I was on Queer Street, and honestly, I don't remember. I have no memory of it. Like, I've lost that time.
Wow.
When I was down, all I remember was I got up and I went like this. And he goes, okay, you can continue. And there was a lot of, like you said, there was a lot of the round left. And he is my favorite referee, by the way. I always am like, Richard! And thank you for not stopping that fight. And I remember I threw a punch and I almost fell over. Yep. I had no balance. I was falling around that ring and I was just trying to run around. Like, my corner's like, move, you know, get on your bicycle. I'm like, I didn't even hear them. Like, I didn't know where I was. And I remember the bell rang and I had no idea where my corner was. I was still hurt. Like, I had no, and I was just like, and Lily came out and got me. And I remember when she sat me down in that corner, I wanted, and I knew there was a camera. I knew that camera was right on me, but I wanted to scream, what happened? Like, how did this happen? I'm going to lose my world title after one round in my first title, world title defense, and everybody's seeing it. And I couldn't say all that. You got to keep it together, you know? And she's just like, mija, you're fine. You're going to get back into this fight. You're okay. You're all right. Once she told me I'm all right, I went, okay, I'm okay. It's a trip.
What actually happened in the corner was that the ringside physician comes over and says, are you okay? And you're like, yeah. He says,
hang on, Bridget. You know where you're at? You know who I am? Huh? You want to hang in there?
I'm really bad with names.
You know who I am? And you're like, well, I'm terrible with names.
He's telling his name. He goes, do you know who I am? I'm like, yeah. And I'm not really good with names. And he goes, you're all right. You're all right. But yeah, that was crazy for me.
In the
that
first
was just
round,
a real honest moment. I was just like, oh crap.
It was funny though. It was funny. So yeah, you go down to the first round. Second round was hers as well. And I think in the third round, you started to turn things around. And by the sixth round, she was done. You know, but
I almost had her.
You almost had her in the sixth.
And then the fifth too, like I had her up against the ropes. And I remember I just let go. And I was like, I hit that girl so many times. She thought she was surrounded. And I was like, they're not stopping it. And I just, and then, you know, then I was like, just even climbing back into that fight, I felt like, wow, this is good. But then I was like, I need to make her pay. And then I was like, okay, I'm tagging her. I'm hurting her. And now I was like, and now I need to knock her out. It was such a cool, like, I'm like, I gotta get her. And she just wouldn't go down till the ninth.
Well, it's a championship fight. It goes 10 rounds, but you stopped her in the ninth. But one thing that really was interesting to me in the ninth round was she hit you with an elbow. Do you remember that?
Yeah. And I've been hurt with elbows. And I mean, it's like a knife, man. Those pretty tight elbows. And one of my kickboxing fights, my head swelled. It looked like an alien on my head from all these illegal elbows. So yeah, I can't stand when I get hit headbutted with cornrows and when I get elbowed, but I was okay.
So did you realize that she had hit you with an elbow and did that piss you off? And because you knocked her out like 30 seconds later.
I don't remember.
Okay. Well, even the male pro fighters that you trained with, your left hand was devastating. Left hook is just, I mean, in the way you sat down on your punches in all of your fights, number one, left hand, far superior than all of your opponents, the way you sat down on your punches. But the thing that really separated you in the Lawson fight was your conditioning.
Yeah, that fight was one.
What was a typical workout for you?
Wow. So we would get up at like 5:30 in the morning, and we would run. Our team would run, and we had so many amazing parks out in LA. We'd go up to the mountain 1 week. We'd go on the beach and do sand running, sprinting, a lot of running, and then in the gym. And so that, so it was 2 days. So then we rest and then go back to the gym, and just everything you can imagine: shadow boxing, jumping rope, hitting focus pads, hitting the bags, all the different bags, speed bag, sparring. And I was on a team. We sparred a lot. We sparred a lot. And a lot of people thought my team, my trainer was Javier Capatillo. Well, first it was, let me go back, Gabriel Gonzalez, who had a world champion son, Speedy Roger Gonzalez, who was amazing and one of my sparring partners. Once we, and we moved away from Gabriel. And so we went with Javier Capatillo, and he got in all that trouble when his fighter, they said he packed his fist up against,
oh, wow,
Sugar Shane Mosley. I'm like, he never did that to mine. But Javier Capatillo, he was, and he passed away. So sad. I loved him. He was amazing. But we worked so freaking hard, and we sparred a lot. So we were known as a team that spars maybe too much. A lot of people are like, oh, you're getting a lot of head damage just in the training. But that's how we worked. And we just worked so hard. And sometimes we'd go to, he would take us to weightlifting gyms, and we would do like supersetting and just for strength, not a whole lot. We weren't trying to make muscles. We were just trying to do exercises clumped together to make us a little bit stronger. But, we trained hard.
When did you know that you didn't mind getting hit?
In karate.
Really?
I didn't care. And karate was a game of tag. It's a who's first, you know? And I was just like, some of these girls, they'd hit me, and they'd be like calling time, you know, break and call for point. I'm like, I'm not done. I'm just about to hit her. So that's when I knew, like, I see some of these girls, and I talk to them, and they're like, oh, I don't know if I really want to get hit. I'm like, well, you're in the wrong sport. You can't think that way. You can't even give it a second thought. Like, I never thought about it. I just wanted to do the hitting, you know? And if I took a couple on the way in, cool, let's go. Like Arturo Gatti, he was one of my, that guy, you know, until he got cut or, you know, dropped, he wasn't in the fight, you know?
Yeah. Oh, the three fights that he had with Mickey Ward are infamous, just legendary.
Forget about it.
Forget about it. Exactly. So you're walking into the ring, you know, you're going to get hit, right?
Absolutely.
Okay. How does that equate to stunt work? Do stunt people always get hurt? Is it just minimize the hurt?
Not always. It's not every job is equal. Sometimes it's ND stunts. We're just running out of the way, getting out of the way of cars, like in a Transformer movie. Although I did get run over by a motorcycle accidentally. But I was okay. But I was so stupid.
How did that happen?
Huh?
How does that happen?
Sometimes on these big budget films, there's a lot of chefs in the kitchen, and you'll have your stunt coordinator, your fight coordinator, you'll have special effects, you'll have the director, and you will have like Michael Bay. And thank God he wasn't on that set. Like there's a couple different sets, is first unit, second unit, there's third unit on his movies. And so glad he wasn't there to see that. I'm not even kidding you. Right before we were lining the shot up, and it was a big shot, like crashes, cars, motorcycle, we're running, stunt people everywhere. Three people who were, you know, my superiors gave me three different directions. And I was just like, And it was, everybody rush, come on, we're losing the light, get to your places, you know. And that's when mistakes happen. That's when people get hurt. And it's so stupid. But I was, you know, you don't want to say anything. You're just, I'm just some person, and I just need to shut up and, you know, hit my mark and go on action. But I was like, uh-oh. And I told my friend, I don't know what I'm supposed to be doing. I have three different directions. And someone just said, just pick one. And I picked the wrong one. And I got in the line of that guy on his motorcycle, and he ran me over. I literally was like freaking yard. I mean, I was okay. And everybody was like, oh my God, are you all right? And I was so embarrassed. I'm like, I'm fine. Cause your adrenaline is running.
Sure.
You know, your adrenaline is running. And I think it saves us, you know, cause I've done some car hits, falling out of cars really sucks. Yeah, I've done some big girl stunts, ratchets, you know, to the flat back, and it's gnarly. Most of the time you're definitely going to get, you're going to get a little hurt. I just don't like to break things. I worked a show and I broke my rib and I didn't want to tell them. The coordinator was like, can you not, are you all right? You know, it's just a broken rib. I'm like, yeah, I'm fine. I just didn't want it to puncture my lung. I'm like, sure. I had 8 Advil and I finished the day, but, you know, it's a broken rib. There's nothing they can do. So yeah, I mean, there's people though have died. I'm like, yes. I don't want to die for this industry. You know,
Dar Robinson,
you know, look at all the legend.
Probably the greatest stuntman in the history of Hollywood.
Legend.
Yeah.
I love how you know all this stuff. you know a lot.
Boxing Hall of Fame, Kickboxing Hall of Fame, Black Belt Hall of Fame, Oakville Senior High School Hall of Fame. Does anyone mean more than the other?
Well, Oakville was really special because that's my heart. And that's where mm-hmm. I'm from, you know, and I always felt like I was kind of a nerd in high school. And I think it was good though, because it motivated me. I'm like, yeah. I want to be somebody, you know, and I did. I really did. And that was very special. And just to get to go home and, you know, I wish my mom could have seen it. She would have. And she sees it. Yeah, whatever.
Yeah.
And I would have to say the Boxing Hall of Fame because, I mean, I sat right next to Pazienza, you know, Vinny Pazienza.
Vinny.
Yeah. And I mean, like,
the Tasmanian devil.
Yeah. And he was a hoot. And like Rafael and Gabriel Ruelas, they were inducted. I mean, but everybody was inducted in this class. And I just felt like, I can't believe I'm sitting here. I couldn't believe it. I was pinching myself. I'm just like, I don't know. Like, how is this happening?
So what do you have one? What is your, I made it moment?
What, my what?
Your, I made it moment. Look, Ma, look, Dad, I made it.
In which thing? Fighting or entertainment industry?
Both.
I felt like I really made it. When I fought on Benny the Jet Yukita's retirement fight in Las Vegas at the Mirage, and that was a big one for kickboxing. That's when I was like, wow. And there was a lot of celebrities that wasn't super starstruck, but I still was like, I think I'm doing it. I think I'm here. And yeah. Then in boxing, Madison Square Garden, that was amazing. Wow. But my pro debut in boxing, I fought Yvonne Trevino the first time, and that was in Arizona, and it was Roger Mayweather was on the card and Michael Carvajal. And Michael Carvajal was one of my all-time favorites because he's a little guy who threw punches and bunches, and I just loved him. And he was the headliner on the card. That I was like, oh, this is awesome. I was so excited. I was like, oh my gosh. So yeah, a couple times. And then right off the bat in the entertainment industry, because nobody knew what the Power Rangers was at first. You know what I mean? I remember calling my mom like, hey mom, I booked it. I booked this gig. And I was telling her I'm like, hey, yeah, it's this footage from Japan. And like these fight people are in these suits. And she's like, that's nice, honey. Check. In about 6 months when that thing took off, my mom was like, I'm seeing Power Ranger pictures. No, stat. And I was just like, huh, what? See about that. No.
how proud were your parents and your brother with what you did?
So proud. Like,
yeah, I
my
bet.
Dad, so proud. And as soon as I took off for LA, it was like the beginning of 93. My dad, not so far after that, was diagnosed with lung cancer. And he kept telling me, honey, there's nothing you can do. Just stay out there. Keep following your dreams. Because it was really happening for me. And I was like, no, Dad, I gotta come home. I got to come home. He goes, nope. I got Mom and Patrick are here. I'm going to go through treatment. I need you to stay there. And so he was more proud than anybody. And my mom would go nuts. She got nervous and she was a paramedic. And, you know, but when she would see me bleeding, like, you know, blood coming like a sprinkler, she's like, you know, it was hard on her to see me get really hurt. Like, yeah. But she loved it. And the whole entertainment industry, she's my biggest fan. I mean, they were, you know, my dad passed away. And then my mom passed away in 2021. And both of them died of stage 4 lung cancer. And that's rough.
You know? Your mom passed away a year after you were in remission or cleared of no evidence of disease.
Yeah, as soon as I rang the bell, it was like day she got that diagnosis. And she had kidney cancer, bilateral kidney, say that 5 times fast, bilateral kidney cancer 5 years before she was diagnosed with lung cancer. Beat it, went into remission, NED, and 5 years later, almost on the money, it metastasized to her lung. Jesus. And she had like a tumor on her neck. And I was there for her because we were all in Florida and, you know, Bob and me made the move from LA to Florida, which was a big move. And I was just like, I don't know. Like, I can't ever leave LA. And now I'm like, thank God I did. My gosh, it's Skid Row everywhere there. I can't even park my car at a meter without there's 5 people living here. I mean, it's sad. And it's like, what do you do about that? But don't even get me started on that.
Well, also living in Florida, you get to keep more of your paycheck.
Yeah. I like that.
I bet you do. I bet everybody does.
I really like that. And it was great because I drove my mom around. I was part of her caregiving team. And my stepdad is wonderful. Like I have my mom struck it twice, right? With my dad and then my stepdad. And I just adore him. He's wonderful. And, you know, it was just really, really, really hard to, you know, see my mom go through. It was much harder than when I went through it.
Yeah, I got that. I watched an interview that you did with the American Cancer Society, and you were talking about how you beat your cancer and then you get your mom's diagnosis. And the emotion that you had talking about your own battle was a lot less than the emotion you had talking about your mom's battle. And, you know, I see that with the parents of the children that we help. It's like, you know, I don't know how many times I've heard this, but it's any parent will say, I wish that I had the cancer and the kid didn't have the cancer. And I mean, you showed it too.
The hardest thing I ever had to go through. I mean, that was my girl. That's my best friend.
Yeah.
And, I hated it. And then COVID was going. So I'm like, sometimes they wouldn't let me go up in there, but I say, mommy, I'm in the parking lot. I'm right here. I'm right here. Everything you're going through. I'm here with you, you know, I got as close as I could, you know, and they wouldn't let me in there. And I just, you know, I walk through it and I'm like, God, I mean, I have a lot of questions, but I have to keep my faith in God that his ways are not my ways. I don't understand the things. And one day we will. One day I'll have all those answers. And until then, I miss her. I still want to text her. I still want to, she was the first one I would tell anything, you know, exciting happening, mommy. You know, and it's a big void, but it's also I know where she's at. Like mm-hmm. I know that I know. And I have incredible faith in God. And I don't understand why did I get the golden ticket? Why didn't she? I have friends going through cancer right now, and I call it my halo. And I pray for them. And, you know, I'm here for them. Like we talk, we email, and I just feel like that's part of my mission. And to share and to just, you can bounce anything off me. You can vent. I know what you're feeling. And when, you know, it's okay to be scared. It's okay. You have permission to be scared. These tough, tough women that I know are just like, they're prayer warriors. They're tough. And it's just like, sometimes you just have to cry. You just have to just ball crocodile tears and feel your feelings and be okay and ask why. And, you know, like we try to be so positive, but sometimes it's just okay to go ahead and have a little mini breakdown. And God knows I've had tons of them. And I just pick myself back up. And, you know, that next scan is right around the corner. So that albatross is always sitting right here, you know, and I'm just like, I don't want to keep thinking about it. It's so mental. I'm like, God, I thought fighting was mental. Facing cancer is on a whole other level. And, you know, so many people, they well-meaning people, they want to, have you checked the statistics and the percentage in the 5-year thing? I'm like, zip it. I stiff arm them. Like, I can't continue. Thank you. I love you. I can't continue this conversation. That's not my story. And don't speak that over me. And, you know, with all due respect, you know, I love you, but no, thank you. And I went into my bubble. You know, you have to try to keep this as positive as you can. But boy, sometimes 3 a.m, I don't even have to look at the clock. It's 3 a.m. I'm up and I have to just breathe and work on breathing and just, you know, stay out of it. And hopefully, you know, I do believe in getting scans. I do believe in, you know, doing my blood work and all of this alternative natural. Now I did all the science. And so I had all my people telling me, oh, you need to go all natural. You know, you need to do, you know, crispy cancer. You need to do that. You need to turn down chemo, radiation. That'll kill you before the cancer. And I'm just getting pounded, man. And I just, it's overwhelming because you don't know. And it's your one life. And I'm like, I'm going to do the chemo. I'm going to do the surgery. I'm going to do the radiation. I'm going to do everything I can and juice and green and go organic and get rid of all my candles and, you know, get air filters. And there's only so much you can control. I became that person. I am a nut. I mean, I used to have like 500 candles, you know, I was candle girl, and those things are toxic and you don't want to breathe that.
Get out. You were talking about food. Food is horrible for you. It's all the preservatives and stuff. Listen, I gave up sugar. I had to give up sugar. And when I gave up sugar, it actually helped my mental health.
Totally.
It's poison.
It's complete poison. And it's so weird because I ate so bad. I ate bacon. I mean, I would eat bacon on a set. I would go, I just want a whole plate of bacon. And I would eat red meat, you know, and I had, you know, colorectal cancer. And I read all this stuff. I eliminated that. I just got rid of that. And I made so many changes. And, you know, food is medicine. It really, really is. What we're putting in, everything we put in, we need to go. What is that doing? And it's hard because I would binge. I would eat all the junk. All the French fries, fast food. I mean, you know, I only ate good like a couple of weeks before my fight. And that was just to make weight. And then I'm like, oh, as soon as I get out of here, man, I'm gonna, you know what I mean? So yeah. This changed everything. My whole world turned upside down. I mean, I have these big green drinks. You know, I do the cold pressed, organic, 3-time strained, you know, kale, spinach, like, all my juices, carrots.
But it's so expensive to eat good.
I pound them.
You know?
Oh my God. It's so cheap. If I just want to drive through McDonald's.
Absolutely.
Boy, try to live. It's like a car payment because I'm a day shopper. I cook now, which is nothing short of a miracle. My stove in Hollywood literally was for storage. Like Bob got there and he was like, this is a while ago, right? So he's like, where's your Yellow Pages? I'm like, in the oven. And he said, what? I go, it's in the oven. He pulls it open like I have stacks of paper and, you know, Yellow Pages, White Pages. He goes, I take it you don't really use this thing. I go, no. I go out to dinner. I go out to eat. And that all changed. Like me cooking now is a miracle, but I know what's going in the food, you know, mm-hmm. and, you know, it really matters. Do I still eat out? Yes. Do I still have cheat days? Yes, but I try to go more organic or do like an apple pie. Like we have Food and Thought out here. Everything in that store is organic. You don't even have to look if it's organic. It's all organic. But I'm like, sometimes different things are at different stores. It's become like my job. it really is a full-time job, taking my supplements, doing the juicing, you know, doing the turmeric and the ginger root and, you know, juicing orange. It's like a full-time job. And then, you know, I'm trying to do whole foods and chop everything up and cook. And then after I try to walk an hour a day, and that's just like, I don't have time for anything
else. Yeah. Right. Like, your battle with cancer, how tough was it?
It's pretty rough. It was pretty rough.
Says the Hall of Famer in kickboxing, boxing, and black belt. Yeah, it was pretty tough. I've seen what people go through in cancer treatment. It looks harder than pretty tough.
Yeah, it was rough.
I don't know if I could do it. I don't know. What I've seen, I don't think I could do it.
Well, I hope you don't ever have to.
Well, same here.
You could if you had to, because really at the end of the day, what's your option? What's your choice? You know, my mom looked at me, and I remember, and she looked at me. We were in the line to get her into chemo, her first chemo. And she looked at me, she goes, and she had tears in her eyes. And she's like, I don't know if I can do this, honey. I don't know if I can go in there. And I just said, Mom, it's not as bad as it looks. And you can do this. And we're going to do this. And we're going to get you through it. You know, now she lost all her hair. We took her to a salon and they shaved it. She sat there. And she was just, it was like me going into the ring. She had her game face on. She's just like, take it off. I was so proud of her. She had no fear. Like she, you know, and I know she was terrified.
Sure.
And I just was like looking at her. And I mean, I was just like, and I did, I could have just started bawling because.
That would have been good for her though.
No. I brought champagne. I'm like, we're celebrating, Mom. This is, you know, you're going to look so great because she's so cute. She has the perfect head. Like, good God, if I lost my head is so, it's ugly. And
no way. Her
head is so cute. I go, Mom, you have the perfect head for this. And I said there was a film, I Am Legend, right, with Denzel. And they all, a lot of the stunt people, shave their heads. I'm like, if we can do this for a film, a make-believe movie, we got this in life. It'll grow back. And then we got all these cool wigs. Like we went shopping for wigs. And I go, Mom, do you know how many dancers and how many times I'm always in wigs? You're like an honorary stunt girl. So let's embrace it. You know?
Well, yeah, I think one of the reasons why maybe Mom had a round head and yours wasn't, she wasn't getting punched for a living.
And falling on it.
That too. I want to continue talking about boxing, and we're going to get to your storied Hollywood career in a moment. But how did you and Don King hook up?
Okay. Gosh, that's a good question. Well, once I saw Christy Martin bust out, I was like, because my whole team, we were always watching fights together at their home with food and partying and watching the fights. And when I saw her on that undercard of Mike Tyson, I went, that should be me. And I had that. I mean, I was a little pit bull. I mean, I was just a Tasmanian devil. I want to get some of that back today, you know, but I was like, we gotta do this. We gotta meet Don King. So I knew he was doing a show and I had been invited to come and check it out. And my whole mission was to get in front of Don King. And we did that. Blinky, my manager, Blinky Rodriguez, who was a great, great fighter in his day also, went to Vegas. We sought him out and Blinky, it's not like we had a set meeting, but I also had some behind the scenes people, that were for me. And I mean, it takes a village and a couple guys that were very connected. They believed in me. They put in a good word, vouched for me. And then finally he goes, okay, I'll take a minute. And he talked to me. He must have seen my heart. And Blinky's a real good talker. And Don King was like, okay, yeah. And so that's what started the ball rolling. And then we had some meetings and negotiations. You know, it was a process, you know. But he finally said, yeah, let's sign you. And he was not going to support my world title, the IFBA. So I knew if I wanted to sign with Don King that I had to let that go. So nobody beat me for my world title. I let it go. I won the world title, but then I wanted to, but I just wanted bigger. And I knew the way to go. I have to get with a Bob Arum or a Don King. Like I just knew that's what I need to do. I already fought for Tengus. Those guys are great. We all were around each other in LA. I got inducted with Roberto Duran.
Oh my gosh.
Right? I'm not worthy. I'm not ready. You know, because I would see him. He would bounce into the gyms. Because also one of my other great, great trainers was Freddie Roach. I got to train with Manny Pacquiao.
I was going
to
say, you must have been with Manny Pacquiao then, because Freddie and Manny are inseparable.
Yeah. So that was awesome. And that was when he had a wild card in Hollywood. It was great. I mean, that was great. And Freddie's amazing. And I've known Freddie forever. Wow. And when it's like, you know, he battles Parkinson's.
Yes.
And, but the second he gets the mitts and he starts, it's like gone. It's a trip. And I love the whole rock steady and the whole movement helping Parkinson's. I have a client who has Parkinson's, and I do a house call. I go to his house and we set up in the gym, in the garage, and I work with him. And his heart, I mean, that's where my heart is. Like, I want to help people. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm going to work with girls. I want to help girls get confidence, and girls who are getting bullied. I want to teach them how to fight and how to feel good about themselves. And I really think we are in a culture where women should know how to fight.
It's interesting that you say that you want to develop self-esteem for these girls, because I'm looking at a quote right here where it says, the Silk Spectre outfit was horrifying to me. There was a little room to hide anything. I am just so self-conscious, and I have a few self-esteem issues that I'm working on. Do you still?
Yeah. I have my own insecurities. And especially as a stunt woman, where, you know, doubling a superhero, that was Zack Snyder, you know, who did 300, and, you know, he's an amazing director, and he did Watchmen. And so that outfit, they had to do a full body cast. Like, I've been casted, like, my head, where they, you know, you're breathing out of straws. It's very scary. And I used to be claustrophobic. But I had to get over that. I had to get over that, especially with the Power Ranger helmet for the movie. Because the movie, when they put that thing on, it snapped. And you were like, you're in there. And it had two little holes. You could hardly breathe. And you couldn't see diddly squat. We had like Windex. It was crazy. So I had to get over claustrophobia.
How do you get over claustrophobia? Because I have it bad.
So did I. I mean, bad. I wasn't going to get the job if I didn't get over it. So I just had to face that fear. And I was terrified. I was like, I'll never be one of those people that where they pour the, you know, the goop on you, you know? And I've done it now like four times. You have to go to a place, because the one thing, when they start covering you up, okay, and as soon as the eyes are covered, okay, I'm okay. I'm just trying to sit there and relax. Because I was in the same place where they did The Rock. Dwayne,
yeah,
and he flipped out. He freaked out. He had to come back, gather himself. His wife had to hold his hand. I mean, and they were telling me all that story. So I'm sitting there and I'm just like breathing. But the second they cover the ears is when now you feel like it's like everybody's voice got really, it's creepy, eerie. And then when they cover your mouth, then you feel like I might die.
Yeah.
And I know I'm getting closer. Like, how you doing? You know, and you have to keep doing the, you know, thumbs up. I'm like, you know, I'm like, and you have to go to your happy place. It was like my mom sitting there having them shave her head. I had to go to that place. I had to face that fear. So, but they did a whole body cast. That was weird. Like, I had my arms out like Christ, right, on this thing, and the whole body, and they didn't tell me, like, As soon as it's hardening around my rib cage, I can't expand that much now because it's hardening. And I'm like, okay, you don't have to take a big, big, big breath. Take little breaths. And I almost flipped out on that one, but I kept it together. They're like, you're almost done. Are you okay? I'm like, get me out of here.
How long did it take? Right.
But that, I don't even remember. It it wasn't that bad. Like an hour for the head, it was like 20 minutes. Like they got it down. You know, it's good because people panic, you know, you freak out a little bit and, you know, but that outfit on Watchmen, I mean, the stunt coordinator is like, first of all, Bridget, you need to cut some more weight. You're constantly told that. And he's like, turn around. He goes, yeah, you got to drop some weight. And so I was like starving. I'm like, I'm no stranger to cutting weight.
I was going
to
say, you gave that, that career was over. You know, I'm done cutting weight, man.
Here we go again. I'm like, I mean, my whole life as a gymnast, they weighed us. As a cheerleader, they weighed us. As, you know, a fighter, they weigh us. And now I'm like, freaking hell. You know, because most of these actresses are so skinny.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like the ones I always end up like, why can't I double a bigger girl? Yeah. You know? Always doubling the anorexics, doubles it, like Eliza Dushku, Dollhouse. She's like a double zero. I'm like, I didn't even know that existed.
Yeah, I didn't either. I'm
like, what? And so, yeah, it's my weight, you know, it was like a yo-yo.
Well, you have doubled for a lot of big name actresses and actors in Hollywood. And I want to talk about that because we've barely talked about your time in Hollywood. We've really talked about your biggest battle with cancer and your mom's battle with cancer. And we've talked about boxing. Can you join me again next week? And we'll talk about Hollywood.
Absolutely. Yeah, I would love to. I would love that.
Yeah, that would be awesome because I've got so many questions about some of the roles you've had and, you know, being a coordinator, being an actual stunt person. And it's just fascinating to me because I could never do something like that because you said there's a lot of fear involved.
Yes, but you know, you're going to feel that fear. There's something wrong if you don't. You shouldn't be doing it if you're not. I mean, you're going to feel that fear. It's just walking through that fear. That's it.
Well, we're going to find out next week how you walk through that fear and all the times that you did. Bridget Riley, thank you so much for joining me this week. And we'll hook up again next week, buddy.
That sounds great. Thank you. I'm so proud of you. And thank you for having me. It's such a pleasure.
That's going to be an excellent conversation next week. If you enjoyed this episode of The Fuzzy Mike and you'd like to help support the podcast, please subscribe and leave a rating and review. Doing so, well, I might just mention you on a future episode of The Fuzzy Mike. How about that? Please share The Fuzzy Mike with your friends. We're trying to grow an audience. And as our fuzzy following grows, obviously the more indebted I am to you. To stay connected with The Fuzzy Mike, you can follow me on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. And for video, please subscribe to The Fuzzy Mike YouTube channel. The Fuzzy Mike is hosted and produced by Kevin Klein. Production elements by Zach Sheesh at The Radio Farm. Social media director is Trish Klein. Next Tuesday, we continue our conversation with Bridget Riley, and we dive into her work as a Hollywood stuntwoman. Don't want to miss this one.
That's it for The Fuzzy Mike. Thank you. The Fuzzy Mike with Kevin Klein. Fuzzy Mike.